Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The brightest of bargains await in the unmissable Black Friday event, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is the text number, as always. Back, Susan, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Let's start with a lucky caller. You believe you are lucky?
I am. I've been fairly lucky right through my life, yes.
You've won competitions?
Yes. I've won money.
Okay.
Lots of raffles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And would you be good at picking investments?
Yes. I have been very lucky.
So are you wealthy beyond belief, Susan?
No, not really.
Okay. And why do you believe? What's the biggest amount you've ever won in one single go?
Oh, I wouldn't like to tell you.
Okay, for security reasons, I understand.
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever won the lotto?
Just a small amount. I don't normally do it.
So. Okay. Do you own prize bonds?
Yes, I do. That's what I've most luck with.
Because I've yet to meet anyone who's won anything on the prize bonds.
No, sometimes I win one or two a month.
Wow. So what's your winning streak on prize bonds? Have you gone 4 months in a row when you've won something on your prize bonds 4 months in a row, or three, or seven, or?
No.
What's your longest?
Some months I'd get two wins, then I might go 2 months without anything. Then I get another one. I gave some to my children, and they win as well.
And do you believe you're lucky in other aspects of your life?
I'm very lucky with people I've had in my life. Very lucky.
Okay. Now, you believe there is a reason.
Yes, from the time I was very young, my mother kept telling me I was the lucky one because I was born in completely wrapped up in a coal or a cowl. Yeah, they had to cut me out. Her doctor was a Professor Cunningham, and he asked to see me, and my mother brought me. He was sick. I think he was in a nursing home at the time, as far as I can remember. He was lying in a bed anyway, and he told me that he had delivered so many children.
Yeah.
He'd been master several times, and I was the only baby he ever delivered like that.
And you believe, and the call would be a membrane, wouldn't it? A very thin.
Yeah, like if my uncle had it, my mother gave it to my uncle.
Oh, okay.
Because he was a radio officer during the war and he was at sea.
Ah.
And he had run into a lot of problems, and each time he came home.
Yeah.
But he had it in his house and he showed it to me. It was like fine tissue paper.
And if it covered your, well, you're only a baby, but if it covered your whole body, how much of it was, when it was held together in a hand, like how much?
Well, he had it folded up and it was quite fragile, so I didn't open it up, but it was fair size, but apparently I was the smallest of my mother's babies.
Mm-hmm.
And at one stage they thought I wasn't alive during the pregnancy because she didn't feel any movement and they couldn't get any heartbeat. And that was around the 5-6 months, she told me.
Well,
so they were kind of surprised then when I arrived in this package and was healthy.
You were in this kind of envelope.
I was totally covered in it. He had to cut me out.
Now, to be born en call, i.e. to have this membrane on your head, is extraordinarily rare. So to have a full body call.
Yes, a full body call, yes.
Must be one in many millions.
That's what the professors told me at the time. It was so unusual, you know.
And when did you believe the full body call brought you extra luck, so to speak?
Didn't really think about it that much growing up, no.
But if you believed you're lucky, which you do, Susan, and you've evidence, if you believe,
yes,
especially with the prize bonds, if you believe you're lucky, does that not mean you feverishly enter every competition and buy every raffle ticket going? And
no, I don't. No, I don't. No.
Why not?
No, I just don't bother, really. Okay. I know at one particular week in my life, I won 5 prizes the 1 week.
Won nearly every day?
Yeah.
On average?
Mm. Yeah.
So you've decided to control your superpower.
Sorry?
It is a kind of superpower you have. I don't know if you've seen these new TV series where the best one is extraordinary. It's fantastic. And they say everyone has a superpower. But your superpower seems to be you're just good. You're just lucky.
I'm just very lucky.
But you
I've
don't,
had a good life.
And you don't abuse your luck. You don't decide to enter every raffle.
No, I don't. No.
Okay. Now, do your friends know you have this superpower, as I'm calling it, this extra bit of luck?
Not really, but my sisters would know. My family would know.
And would they say to you...
My own children would know.
Okay. And would they say to you, ma'am, what are you putting your money into now? What do you say you invest...
No.
They don't
ask me. No,
they don't. Okay. No. So they respect the gift as well, so to speak?
I'd say so, yes.
Okay. And have you ever come across, obviously, given your situation, Susan, you'd be extra conscious. Have you ever read about anyone born in a full body call?
No, I've actually only today I spoke to a lady who said that a relation of her husband's was born with one, and the child had been delivered at home.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did the word luck enter it at all? Did you ask us?
They were told that it was lucky. They were told it was lucky.
Okay. Yeah. Stay with us, Susan. Susan's in Galway. Joan MacDonald is down below Galway in County Clare in Ennis. Joan.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
That is it. I never heard of a whole body call ever.
Oh, there you are now.
Yes. Mine was just over my face, like, and under my chin. It ended there. I'm looking at it. Now, it's nearly 89 years old, Joe.
Okay.
And my mother gave it to me when I grew up. I can't remember when she gave it to me. And she had it that you could hold it up to the light. But over the years, it's got
obviously
compressed into the tissue paper, which was the original paper she gave me. And I can see the forehead and the little jaws and the bit that probably came down under my chin, you know. Yeah.
And where is it now, Joan?
I have it here in a drawer. Well, I have it beside the phone now when I'm speaking to you, yes. And I have two daughters-in-law who I love dearly, but one of them was born with a call. And her mother was, I think she told me, her mother was asked for it to give to someone who worked at sea.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it to, Sandra, because she was born with it, you know. Yeah.
And Susan has inordinate good luck, but she doesn't abuse it. Joan, do you have...
I don't win things or anything, but I know, like, from when I was born, I had the best mother and father anyone could have.
Yeah.
3 younger sisters, and my husband of 64 years. So
brilliant.
He must be okay if I'm still with him after 64 years.
Yes.
And I have 4 children and 2
excellent.
two granddaughters.
And if you were to hold up the call in your hand, can you hold it in your hand in the tissue paper?
Well, I'll hold the tissue.
Or is it very delicate?
Yes, I can see the little, what I think anyway is the little face, you know.
It sounds like a shroud of sorts. You know the Turin shroud where the body of the imprint of the body of...
Oh, yes, I know what you mean. Yes.
Okay, stay with us. Where is... Harry wants to do paper blessings. It's Patricia, are you your call about calls, so to speak? It is, yeah. Patricia, come in. Come into the living room,
yes,
Patricia.
Yes.
Sit yourself down. Put the kettle on there, will you, Joan? Put the kettle
great
on there.
Idea.
Okay, Patricia. Patricia.
Yes, Joan. Yes.
You were born with a call.
I was indeed. And I was intrigued yesterday when I listened to your show because I've never heard anybody talk about it in a public arena before. So it was that's why I responded.
And when did you become aware that you had been born?
Oh, my mother told me about it from a very, very young child, but I didn't get it. I didn't take possession of it until she passed. My older sister then gave it to me, and I have it. But I can remember my mother so clearly being so thankful to the midwife, because we were born, of course, in nursing homes, not in high-tech hospitals.
Yeah, in those days.
She was so thankful that the midwife, you know, told her about it and looked after it and made sure it didn't get lost or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do have it still, and I show it to my children occasionally.
And do you believe it brings you good luck?
Well, you know, luck is different things.
Yeah, okay, okay, good point.
When I look back on it, you know, I've had plenty of challenges in life, but I've had so much good in my life. You know, health, energy, husband, family, you know, like I have been very lucky. And yes, I've won the odd thing, but I think that might have happened anyway.
Okay. You know?
But as such, I just felt I was very conscious never to let it get lost.
Okay.
You know, my mother used to always say that you don't lose it, you will lose your luck, you know. So I have it, and like who to give it to now is the next challenge.
Oh, you will think of passing it on?
Oh, I intend to pass it on to one of the family, yes.
Well, you heard, it's been there, the pishog, that, so to speak, that a call will protect you from fire and water.
Yes.
And that's why the sailors, I presume, firefighters.
And my mother used to often say that she would see adverts on the Sunday papers from, you know, captains of ships, and they're looking to buy a call.
Are you serious?
Because it would keep them. Yeah, she would say that. She would say, don't ever sell it.
so you could buy and sell a call?
At that time, I could
remember of course,
that being in the paper.
So the Sunday paper would say, I'm about to go to sea with Irish Shipping. I want to bring a call with me because of the various gifts attributed to it.
Yeah.
And they're willing to pay.
Yes, yes. No, I haven't seen that in a long time, but I remember my mother used to talk about it. I mean...
Yeah, no, that fits. Harry Eastman, Joe at RTE.ie 51551. Harry.
Hello, Joe.
Are you talking about your call as well?
Well, I was born with a call as well, yeah. And my twin sister was born with a call.
Okay.
We were born at home, and unfortunately, the midwife overdried them when she was drying them. She kind of crisped them up a little bit, but it didn't matter. I was able to bring it to Australia with me.
Now, what do you mean she crisped them up a bit?
Well, it must have been probably a veil. It's a kind of a veil.
Well, yeah,
and
yeah.
They were... I don't know why, but they overdried her anyway.
Okay. And about it became stiff.
Yeah, it was just, It was in a little box, so I have it in a little
box. Okay. And can you hold it in your hand, or would it disintegrate?
Well, mine was taken, I had it in a crate coming back from Australia, and the crate was broken in, and I lost a lot of stuff, and the car was lost as well.
Do you think they deliberately broke into the crate to get the call?
Yeah. Well, they took the call anyway and other stuff.
But you've never drowned, obviously.
No, I was fairly lucky. I was gassed twice.
Wow.
Survived gassed twice.
Yeah.
I worked in an air shaft, and there was a bit of dust falling down from four floors up above me. And I went out to the toolbox to get a dust cap, and... There was no dust cap, but there was a safety helmet, and the foreman up on top kicked the block over, and it fell four floors, and it brushed the safety helmet and broke my finger. That was how lucky I was.
And what do you mean you were nearly gassed twice?
Yeah.
Where did that happen?
It happened one time in Guinness's. I was walking in the drain and they got the wrong chemicals and they flushed it into the drain and I was overcome with the fumes. Spent
two weeks
in Stevens' hospital.
Wow.
And I was in another place in Australia and the place flooded and they were pumping the stuff out and the petrol machine where it was and it was gas then as well.
Of course, the fumes. And what, you were knocked out?
Yeah.
Jesus, Harry. You're jinxed. Or, sorry, you're lucky.
I was very lucky, yeah.
Wow. And do you attribute that to the call?
Well, my mother told me I was always lucky anyway.
Yeah. And then what about your twin?
Well, she died in her 50s, actually. Brain hemorrhage, yeah.
Oh, God. Now, by the way...
She died in Canada.
Okay. So where did you live? Australia?
I lived 8 years in Australia and I brought the call to Australia with me.
Yeah.
I went with a friend of yours, Frank Crummy.
Ah, the great. Now, you have to say the great Frank Crummy.
The great Frank Crummy, yeah. We were both done. We were neighbours and we went travelled to Australia together. 1956.
Ah. The Olympics.
We were in the Olympics. I was in the Olympic MCG when Delaney won the 1500 metres.
Ah, fantastic.
But we were on the other side of the ground, so we didn't see him crossing the finish line, but we heard it on the radio.
But you were there the day it happened.
I was there, yeah. But we were on the other side of the ground.
Okay, well done. And how long were you in Australia? Did you live in Australia?
8 years.
Oh, 8 years, sorry. And then you came back here or did you travel for?
Yeah, I got married. I was engaged before I went.
Okay.
I'm a plaster by trade.
Good
and
lad.
The building line wasn't good, so I decided to start a new life in Australia. Went to Australia with the few bob I had saved and then sent for the girlfriend. Got married in Australia. Had three children born there.
Okay.
And one born in Ireland and married in Australia. So big Australian connection.
Oh, fantastic. Now, what's the Pope Pius the 12th connection?
Yeah, well, when we got married, my father-in-law was the sacristan in the church in the Navan Road. Where my wife came from, he sent us the paper lesson
from Pope Pius.
Pope Pius the 12th.
Now, have you heard the story about Pope Pius the 12th?
When
he died, they embalmed him because you know the body is on display for a week.
Yeah.
It remains, and apparently whoever embalmed him made a complete hames of it.
Yeah.
And the body, I'm looking it up there this morning, the body exploded. Because he had whatever liquids and fluids, anyway, it's not funny. I don't mean to be funny, but it is another story because there's a man...
Oh, yeah, he was involved in the war as well.
Oh, yeah, we know that. There was a controversy over that. Stay there, Harry. I'll go to Mary Gordon before the break. Mary.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
You were born in a call.
I was indeed in 1951, Joe.
Great stuff. And are you lucky?
I still have it.
Are you lucky?
I am as lucky as a black cat, Joe.
A black cat is
lucky. Lucky as a black cat.
Yeah.
Especially health-wise, Joe.
Okay. Well, I've had
many ups and downs through the years with my health and that. Since I got married in 1972, and I've come out of each little experience by the skin of my teeth, Joe. So it has brought me extensive good luck.
Okay.
And my brother-in-law actually was a captain with the BNI back in the day, Joe.
Yeah.
In Dublin. He lived in Dublin. He's passed on since. And he tried on several occasions to get it off of me because in connection with the water, you'll never drown.
Safety, yeah.
And the amazing thing about it is, Joe, I wouldn't sit in a bathtub of water. I'm terrified of water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
There you go.
But and Susan, in fairness, pointed me in the right direction when I was saying, you know, are you lucky with raffles? And she said, she said, but it's not all about that. It's about luck.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't win an argument, Joe. But lucky to me is a day of good health. Waking up every morning, I pinch myself, Joan. I said, really, you shouldn't be here. They call me Flesh, by the way. I was telling your researcher, Joe, my nickname is Flesh Gordon because my surname, obviously, is Gordon. So
okay.
I took my late husband's name. He was a military man when he passed away. So I'm known as Flesh now. So
and why are you known as Flesh?
We won't even go there.
Okay.
Just because of the connection with Flesh Gordon.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Character,
okay.
Flesh Gordon, Joe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You say your main... When you're counting your blessings, you count your luck in things like health and family and rather than money.
Absolutely, Joe, yeah. Because I've got one son who's doing very well for himself, college, a good job. My grandchildren, I have three grandchildren. They're all healthy, happy and right. Doing their thing. I have a great family back up behind me, always there for me, so... That to me, I know it'd be nice to win the lotto in the morning, Joe,
yeah,
but luck
yeah.
to me is waking up and appreciating every day that God
well
sends
done.
Me. That's my luck.
Well done. And you won't part with the call, so to speak?
Not if I got a quarter of a million in the morning, Joe.
Half a million.
It's staying with me.
Half a million.
Even a million, Joe.
Okay.
It says with me now.
And what's it like? You describe it for me, Mary, please.
I was saying to the researcher there, Joe, it's hard to describe it. It reminds me of if you put a cake in the oven with greaseproof paper and it goes a kind of brown
yeah.
and discolored through
that's,
baking.
Yeah.
But a very fine version of that, Joe.
Okay.
Now, it's
that's
in tatters. There's only some of it left, but it's there.
That's an excellent description, Mary.
Yeah, there you go now.
An excellent description. Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay. God bless you, Mary. Mary Gordon.
God
Harry
bless.
Eastman. Susan. Susan, just listen to this. Susan was born in a full body call. Elaine, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Joe at rt.ie 51551. So it was your son, Elaine?
Yeah. My son, he's 17. He was born in his full body call.
And, you were there.
Yeah.
And when did you realise this?
No, it was only actually after he was born. And he was born quite quickly, obviously. It was a rush up the N7 to the Coombe. He was the third child. So I was in the waiting room in the Coombe and I kept saying, no, I know this is coming. And the midwives are kind of like, yeah, she's been a bit dramatic.
Yeah.
But anyway, lo and behold, in the waiting room, Charlie wasn't waiting. So he was delivered on the bed in the waiting room. He didn't get time
wow.
to go to a full delivery suite
yeah,
or anything like
yeah.
that. So he came quite quickly. So I suppose there was no controlled breaking of waters and so on. And I knew the midwife kind of said, obviously, when his head popped out, it was enclosed in this membrane. But when the rest of his body came out, he was fully enclosed in it. So I remember sitting up and looking down at the bed and
yeah.
he was like a little alien in this water membrane. And he was like pushing his arms, trying to get out, and the midwife and the
oh my god!
I think the gynecologist they put their hands on it, and they kind of tore it apart, and all the fluid fell out in the waiting room. Yeah, so it was a very
but Elaine.
Strange experience.
Elaine, E L I A N E, turns into alien.
Well, we wouldn't go there now, but that's...
No, but, I'm saying, did you say
yeah.
to your boy?
Oh, yeah, no, I did. No, I did. I've often kind of showed him, even, I think we found a YouTube video online and kind of said, this is how you were born. And
yeah.
the midwife at the time was a German midwife. And she was lovely and she was all excited because I don't think she'd ever delivered a baby in a full call before. And she spoke in German. And I was going, what are you saying? And she goes, oh, she's in my country, in Germany. We call that the angel's cloak.
Yeah.
Whatever the German word she said,
wow.
it meant angel's cloak.
Ah.
So that's how they describe it, that that you're covered in an angel's cloak. Whatever she said in German, she said that's what she told me it was. She, that's very,
oh,
very
that,
lucky.
Isn't that a beautiful way of
said
putting
it's an
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when you're,
yeah,
looking, when you're looking down at your baby...
Yeah. Yeah,
you saw a golem from Lord of the Rings. You saw this thing and covered,
yeah.
trying to get out.
Yeah. And it was very like he was there. Like I think the staff that were around, as I said, it was literally a bed in a waiting room. There was four other women in this waiting room, I think, in to have their blood pressure checked or something. But I said there was no time to move me. And I think they were all a bit stunned by it. And then I think the doctor ran in and he kind of obviously just put his hands into the middle of it and he tore it apart.
Okay.
And whatever. Yeah, like that to get the baby out. The baby was obviously very safe inside it. But but it was strange.
Fairly dramatic. And is your son, of course, with a mother like you, of course he's born lucky. But Elaine, is he lucky?
Look, I mean, he's a great kid and he's very gifted at sport and, he's well-rounded, but I suppose, look-wise, he hasn't won the lottery or anything recently.
Well, overall, given the number of people who participate, very few people have won the lotto, but anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, he's a good, well-rounded 17-year-old. Okay. He's lucky in life, I suppose. But it was only when I came down to the kitchen to make a cup of tea and I heard the story and it just seemed to be a lot more, older people. Yeah. And I was going, mine was only 17 years ago. And I think it was because he was born quite quickly, in a sense, that it ended up happening.
Now, given the circumstance, I suspect you don't have to call, do you?
No, I don't. Yeah, and that's listening to the other people on the phone. I'm like, God, I was never offered it. I was never told, oh, God, you should keep this. Yeah. And obviously, I didn't know any different. And it was really kind of conversations afterwards that I realised that it was very rare. It was very special and so on. But I don't know what, I never asked what they did with the membrane, I suppose.
Well, one of our German-speaking listeners has said it's called the Engel's Mantel.
Oh, is that what it is? And okay, that's what it is. But she said it to me, the midwife, and I said, what's that? And she said, in my country or my culture, we call it the Angel's Cloak. Yeah, she said, that's very, very lucky. And she did mention something about that fishermen would pay a lot of money.
And did you know, as Susan said, there'd be ads in the Sunday paper saying, if you have a call, I want to buy
it.
Really? Yes.
Well, that's very strange. Right, okay. But I'm afraid I didn't keep it now.
It's be sailors.
No one told me to keep
sailors buying. By the way, did you get a fright when the doctor ran in?
No, I didn't really. Because the baby was, as I said, I sat up and he was laying on the bed, but he was in this. Now, it was probably felt like a long time, but it was probably half a minute, as such. And then they took him out and he was crying and, he was fine. So, I wasn't fazed by it too much. But, it was a bit strange. But I thought, no, it was a third child, but I thought it maybe happened a bit more frequently than not, but obviously not.
Okay. Well, brilliant, vivid description of what happened. Elaine, great. Thanks indeed. Thanks indeed.
Thank
and kind
you.
Regards to your 17-year-old. And the rest of your family. Susan.
Yes, Joan.
People are ringing in saying, would you have a go with the lotto numbers for tomorrow night? Give us a clue or have a guess.
No, I don't usually do the lotto.
Okay.
No.
Can you, by the way, do you feel anyway psychic be times?
Yes,
do you?
I can, if anything happens to any of my family, I can tell you.
What do you mean?
You know, I would get a feeling that there was something happening with one of my family.
Like a shiver.
And I'd phone up. Yeah, and I was just a bit psychic that way. Mm.
Okay.
Yes.
So you have a number of them.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I have. Okay. My mother had it too. I can smell cancer and I can smell chibi.
You can smell cancer and you can smell what?
Chibi. If somebody has cancer near me, I can smell it and I can also smell chibi.
Okay.
My mother was the same.
And what do doctors say about that?
They don't say much about it.
Yeah. Okay. No,
but I can.
Susan, look after yourself and continued good luck in every sense of that word.
Thank you.
Okay. And the mood, the CV, when I use the phrase, you're super, your superpower. It's the program I'm talking about is Extraordinary. It's on, I think it's on Disney. But the star of it, without a shadow of a doubt, is a young Irish woman called Mairead Tyers, T-Y-E-R-S, and she's from Cork. And it's been commissioned for a second series. Basically, everyone in this series has a superpower. Now, it could be able been able to read your mind or see it. It's extraordinarily well done. And it's written by a woman called Emma Moran, who's from this island as well. Anyway, stay safe with your superpower, Susan, and Harry as well. Harry, how are you doing health-wise?
I'm 90 years of age, Joe, and doing well.
Good. You sound like Ronnie Delaney. You're still with us. Okay. Yeah.
I saw Freddie Tate winning the silver medal in Melbourne as well.
Fred Tate, the boxer.
Yeah.
I met him once.
And Harry Perry and Caldwell, won bronze medals.
Well, Fred Tate had a shop in Church, just off Church Street in Dublin. That's where I used to meet him. If it's the same Fred Tate, the boxer.
The boxer, yeah.
Yeah. He ran a shop. Yeah, that's my memory of him. And they were good times, especially for there for Ronnie Delaney. Okay, Harry Eastman, going to meet him at Susan Joe at RT.E551. Text me.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Helen Nohaly. Helen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Tell us what happened. Thanks for making the call yesterday. Is there a speaker on the
back?
Tell us what happened.
I was driving through Kilmechanic yesterday when I had a blowout.
County Wicklow,
and I just knew if there was a terrific bang.
Wow.
And then another bang shortly after that. And I pulled in, side of the road, and I pulled up the head of the car and hoping somebody would stop. But nobody stopped. I was there for an hour and I had my hand out.
Wow.
And probably shouldn't have done that, but nobody stopped. And then finally, this car pulled in ahead of me.
Yeah.
And two people, a man and a lady, got out and they came back and they said they had passed me earlier.
Yeah.
And they were coming from a funeral in Wexford, I think.
Okay.
And they felt guilty and they came back, got off at the next exit, and they came back and they changed the tire for me. And he said, he looked at the spare tire and he said, it doesn't look like there's much air in it.
Yeah.
And he said, follow me to the next, there's a service station just ahead, and followed me down and put the air in the tire. And I asked them for the number, but they didn't give it to me and I don't blame them, but they wanted my number to make sure I got home okay. And they called me, you know, about an hour later when I got home. And I had no way of thanking them except by calling you.
To check up on you. And Helen, when you heard the bang, Kilmacanog was busy now.
Oh, my God, the traffic was incredible. But I think...
What did you think had happened when you heard the bang?
I knew I had hit something.
Okay.
And... when I was coming back after I got and went down to my garage, but he didn't have the tire for the car, he had to order it. But when I was coming back, I went slowly by the place where it happened, and I saw a corner of a brick in over the yellow line.
So you heard this, bang. You stopped. You pulled in. Well, you had to pull in the tire, and you said there was a second bang.
There was a second bang, but I think somebody told me the first bang was actually the brick hitting something under the car.
And
threw it out to the side.
You pulled
and then
in.
I slowed down, and then there was another bang. That was the air apparently coming out of the car. I found out all this to somebody else.
You're like a mechanic at this stage, and you've learned so much in the last 24 hours. And did you? What's that? The hard crossways.
Oh my God! It was frozen, and I had my hand out, and. Somebody told me, you know, pull your skirt down, but I didn't have a skirt on, and I just put my hand out, but nobody stopped.
And
they were just flying by.
Just whizzing
and
by.
I couldn't get anybody on the phone. I couldn't call. I couldn't get a signal. I don't know. I was using the phone on the car. I couldn't get through to anybody. I didn't know what to do.
And
I was
Helen,
hoping a police car would come by.
Yeah, of course.
By.
And Helen, would it have been obvious
people
had seen that you were in distress?
I had the back of the car open, you know, and I was standing by it and put my hand out, but absolutely nobody stopped for over an hour.
Wow.
And I thought, God, what am I going to do when these people came along? And
so
like
I know that stretch very well.
Sure,
in an hour, 1,000 cars would go by.
Oh, easily. And I wondered, Joe, I hate to say this, but I cursed every card that passed me.
Did
and
you?
I hope they all got punches after it.
No, they won't.
But,
you won't be sending them papal blessings if...
I won't be sending Christmas cards.
On one hand, that's shocking that an hour went by in Kilmacanog.
Nobody stopped. Yeah. And there's a close-knit community, as they always say, you know.
Yeah, but remember, most people going through Kilmacanog are going somewhere else.
And that's true. And I think probably, you know, I was told since that, you know, people would pull over and pretend, you know, to get in order to get somebody to stop
and maybe rob
them or something.
No, we're not Los Angeles. No, it doesn't happen.
That's watching too many...
Did you get the names of these two incredible Samaritans?
Oh, I did. Rachel and Paul.
Okay.
And
which one of them do you want to thank first? Because both of them are there, Paul or Rachel. Which one of them do you want to talk to first?
Well, Rachel had a beautiful coat on. It's hanging on the ground, and she was hammering the nuts out of the wheel. And she was telling me to get it back into the car to keep warm. But I felt so guilty about them doing this. They were just good Samaritans. So that's all. I can't thank them enough.
Rachel Mitchell, good afternoon. And Paul Mitchell.
Good afternoon, John.
How are you? You got to talk to them.
Yes.
Oh my God! I can't believe it. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Helen. Helen.
Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart.
Oh my God!
No,
And Rachel, what was your? What happened? You were driving.
We were coming back from a funeral. My husband's cousin had passed away, and we were just past, say, the Glenview Hotel, and there's a kind of a bend on the road there, and we seen the car, and you could tell that Helen was looking for help. And to be fair, I can't take the credit. It was my husband Paul who, leave her, Rachel. He goes, I wouldn't sleep tonight. So we did a U-ey then down at the came back up past the Glenview and over, and then came back down around. And she had a blowout on our the inside wheel. So it was just so cold, and you couldn't leave her there, in fairness. So Paul got the spare out and then got it changed. But he was more concerned, to be honest with you, that the spare didn't look great. It needed a bit of air in it. So we got her to drive behind us down to the closest garage, and then he pumped it up. We got a bit of air in it. And then just wanted to make sure that she got home safe. And, you know, you wouldn't leave anybody in distress, to be fair.
Well, Rachel, a lot of people did.
Do you know what? I give people credit. It was one of those sides of the road that you couldn't have stopped straight away. You would have had to do what we did to come back on yourself. So a lot of people might have been thinking somebody else will stop soon enough. But
That's a fair observation. Helen, by the way, was it cold? Yes, it was freezing.
It was freezing. The tears were coming out of my eyes. I couldn't see. With the cold, yeah. But I kept thinking a truck would stop or, you know, but nothing. Until Rachel and Paul came along.
Yesterday afternoon was freezing.
It was getting cold. Yeah. It was starting to kind of get dark. And look, it was one of those things. Like I say, Paul stepped out of fire and anyway, to know that she got home okay. You wouldn't leave anybody on the side of the road.
Okay.
So we got it fixed and... even though he was in all his good gear, but he was okay.
And what about Helen specifically remembers Rachel's coat. Rachel.
It was hanging on the ground.
You put it on the ground, did you?
Paul was.
We were just hunched down. The coat survived. Don't worry, you've seen worse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to Paul. Paul Mitchell.
How are you doing, Joe?
How are you? Well done, the two of you now. Seriously.
Ah, don't be silly.
As long as
Helen was okay, that was the main thing.
In fairness,
as Rachel said, no problem, Helen, not at all. As Rachel says, probably, in fairness, I'd like to think other people would have done it. I know lots of people didn't stop, but in fairness, as Rachel says, mate, it was sort of, I nearly only copped Helen near the end, as was right on top of her, and was probably more dangerous for us to stop. So,
Probably,
30 seconds later, then I said, you know what, there's a junction there, I'll go back. And
good lad.
In fairness,
good lad.
When we went back,
apologies to the people who didn't stop. I said something bad. I should
But people still should have stopped now, in fairness. But like I said, I suppose by the time I got back, I was saying to Rachel that probably somebody going to be there then anyway. But as it turned out, there wasn't anyone there. So I was actually, you know, it only took 20 minutes. I couldn't have left someone there at the side of the road.
But then you went to the garage, got the tire blown up, and.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I put on the spare, and the spare didn't look too good, to be honest with you. So, okay. The garage, the kiln mechanic, was probably about, maybe a kilometre away. So, yeah. I just said, get down to the garage, and the spare tour was only half full. So, I just filled it up with air and just told Helen. Now, the wheel wasn't going anywhere. It was well put on, but I didn't think the spare was great, to be honest with you. So I knew just told Helen not to go too far on it, not too fast. So.
And Paul, are yourself or Rachel? Are yourself or Rachel mechanics?
No. In fairness, Joe, it was only changing. It's only changing.
I asked Rachel,
wasn't too technical.
Yeah, not fair play now. Really. And by the way, Ian, Helen, I'm baffled about your phone.
I couldn't get in touch with anybody.
Rachel,
I think Helen might have been either in kind of no man's land or in fairness, it's dangerous to be in the car when it was on the hard shoulder. So I think Helen got out, locked up the car.
That's what you're told to do,
connected. Yeah, and I think the phone was still connected. So Helen was outside the car trying to make a phone call, but it was ringing inside, and I think there was a bit of confusion there.
Yeah, I see.
So, yeah.
Okay, so maybe people were
answering.
And then
when you're panicked on the side of the road, you don't think of these things. And
Because I'm thinking back up the road from you, Helen, in Kilmacanog there. There's two garages, which are very helpful, I'm sure, in themselves. But just 100 yards back is Kelly's, which is one of the biggest bus rescue. They're the company that when the Beast, Barack Obama's limousine, got caught in Balls Bridge. Remember, it was coming out of the embassy and it was so long it went up, got caught on the lip, Who do they call? They call Kelly's in Kilmacanog. They have a massive compliment. Now, I'm just saying, if the phone had been working and you had to rang somebody and maybe they said, hang on, the Kelly's would have been down and had you home in jig time. But thank God, Paul and Rachel.
Well, I got through to Davis. I was able to get through to Davis. But he said, I'm on the way into the city at the moment. He said, only for that he would have come.
Who's David, your relation?
No, Davis. They're
they're like company.
A rescue place here.
Yeah.
Well, but he was on his way into town and he couldn't come.
And you're not a member of AA or RAC?
I couldn't find. I understand.
And how were you afterwards when you got home?
I was grand, and Rachel and Paul called and
so good at them.
Make sure I get home okay. And
Paul and Rachel, where were you heading back to Dublin at that stage?
Yeah, we were just heading home. So we were coming from Cork town, and we were just heading home to the kid that Isabel would have been, the daughter would have been coming in from school soon, so just to get home for 3:45. But like I say, I'm going to have to run because I'm actually in work, Joe. But listen, Helen, I was just glad you got home safe and sound.
You're brilliant, Rachel.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
By the way, you're going
Helen, take care.
The two of you, whether you like it or not, are going to Donegal. Gallen Hospitality up and on. They run a number of hotels in Donegal and they want you to come up for a night and the breakfast and the whole shebang. We'll give you the details afterwards.
Oh, my God.
Will you be able to... Now, Helen, you're not going. Helen.
Oh, no. No, I don't mind, Joe.
Helen, where are you living, Helen?
I'm living in Upper Dargle Road, Bray.
Okay. Well, I'm going to Rachel and Paul are going to Donegal. You're going to the Seafield Hotel in Ballymoney for a night. You know it. It's a brilliant
hotel,
award-winning spa. Yeah, Micheál Cunningham will look after you down there for a night and your breakfast. And it's a great hideaway. So Paul and Rachel are going to Ford.
They're going to
Donegal.
Amazing.
Paul and Rachel, will you check your tyres before you head to Donegal?
I'll get a flat.
You're stars.
Listen,
it's great.
Joe,
happy
nice
Christmas. Happy Christmas,
Ellen,
we can
care.
Say.
Happy yeah. Christmas, Paul.
Thanks,
Rachel.
Thanks, John.
Well done. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks. Thanks to Gallen Hotels and thanks to the Seafield. Joe, so everyone got something. There's one for everyone in the audience. I'd say that for years and years and years.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Joan Nolan Farrell. Joan, Veritas.
Hi.
The last shop about to close in the next few weeks. They were all over the country, but unfortunately they've hit hard times. They were shops specifically. Do you remind people, because you worked there for many years.
So I started in, I left school in 79, but I was a part-time worker.
Okay.
So I worked when I was kind of in my junior cert years, and then my two sisters were previous to me, Mary and Helen Nolan.
Okay.
We're all from Raheny, so lots of people out there would know of us. So we
okay.
It was kind of like weird. We were working in a religious bookshop.
Yeah, that's what did it sell?
So it sold everything. So even though it sold the papal blessings, downstairs used to be known as the AIDS department. And the AIDS department, AIDS wasn't even out at that time. That was the audiovisual AIDS.
Okay.
But we also then broke out into general books.
Ah.
So on one side we had general books and on the other side we had religious books. So I
okay.
worked there for about probably about 16 years.
Wow. Now, you tell the story. Is it true of the bishop coming in?
I do. Bishop McNamara. He was Bishop of Kerry
and then he
was made at Dublin.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah,
when did he
come? And he used to come in.
Yes.
And he used to say the chauffeur used to come in and say the bishop is on his way, and we'd pull off some books that he didn't like us selling. So, and they could be religious.
Wow.
Like they could be like moral ethics books that Gil Macmillan might have published,
of course,
or Columba
yeah.
Press must have published. But he didn't like them. He'd pull them off and he'd hand them to you.
No, hang on.
And we'd just put them.
The bishop would come in. The chauffeur would come in first. And he'd say, "Run, here's what year was this, Joan?"
This is the
70s.
It was definitely in the 80s anyway. I'm thinking, I can't remember. But we had, you see, at that time we had a big sex education kind of section.
Yeah.
So lots of people were very Catholic and they used to come in for their methods for their family planning, like the Billings methods.
Of course,
and
their
sex education books for their children. And like that was a huge, huge section in our shop.
And remember, around that time, in one sense, if it's 70s, 80s, it was a time when people like Angela McNamara were writing about the importance of...
My dear daughter.
Yes, about talking to your children about sex education.
They did.
They did.
And on a Saturday night, I was young, so we would be in the pub and the Sunday World would come around. I don't know if you remember on Saturday night, we'd be in the pub and the papers come around. And we'd be there, about 20 of us in the Green Dolphin in Raheny, and we'd be looking to see the problems and say, "Oh, John, you'll be busy. You'll be busy next week.
Go away."
There's my dear daughter. She's talking about it again. And that related your daughter to the Virgin Mary.
Okay, but the image, hang on, this image of the bishop... The Archbishop of Dublin, as he then was, was he in his ecclesiastical gear?
No.
He'd just be dressed
even
as a...
Even though we sold them as well. Remember, Veritas also did sell them.
So he'd go in, he'd come in and walk around the shop.
He would.
Take this book down, that book down.
Yeah.
And do you remember, were they all about family planning or were they about moral theology or
morals.
Ethics?
He would have went for the moral section. He wouldn't have maybe... Like, I think, if I remember, one was called Faith and Ethics. And he would disagree with that. Now, it was probably by a Marister or a Dominican. It wouldn't have been, you know, he wouldn't have had a lot to say about them. You know, Brian Darcy wasn't, you know, they were in order. So they said a lot more than the actual ones under the Catholic Church, that kind of thing.
What about were Brian Darcy's books up on the shelf at that stage?
They absolutely were, yeah.
And what did the bishop do when he came in?
He didn't, because his was more prayerful. You know, he didn't do the morals, you know, but McNamara used to come in. And he's probably the only one that really did that, you know, because the others were probably...
Probably saying.
Behind the
So,
honestly,
well, the big
such great
the controversial theologian was Hans Kung, wasn't it? Do you remember him?
Hans Kung, he was, the German.
But he was a Catholic theologian, but he was kind of ostracised, wasn't he? And
Sir Ratzinger was another one, you know, like, I mean, when you think of this, he was the German as well, so he made Pope, but, you know, so paper blessings, Veritas did paper blessings.
Okay.
Memoriam cards, they did all of those things, you know, and then we kind of got a general manager who broke out into the general books trade.
Oh, could it try and...
Yeah, to try and make it. So one half was religious and one half was the generals, you know, and then, look, surely, and downstairs was the AIDS department. Like, I don't know, it's sad that Veritas going, but I think in all the years that I've worked there, there's a Dalton family there from Dunnycarney, and Martin Dalton worked there all his life.
Okay.
And I still think he's probably down in the warehouse in Hanover Quay, still working.
Well, and I think they will still have an online offering, so to speak. But
yeah, because they were huge publishers.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, and then I'm thinking I launched a few books there. Be time for different. They were memoirs or whatever. It was a lovely store, lovely staff, and a great location in the one in Dublin was anyway. I know there's a load of them around the country, and they're all gone now. And what about? The bishop wouldn't ask you what you were reading, would he, Joan?
God, he wouldn't. No, he wouldn't dare. I never got a paper lesson. I worked for the company and I never got a paper lesson. Like, we might have worked for them, but, you know, we didn't adhere to all their teachings, and we weren't religious, really. We worked in the shop. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't Holy Joes.
Yeah. So what were you reading in your spare time?
Probably the Mills and Boons downstairs in the Overstocks. Okay. Or the Book of Love. There was a book there called The Book of Love.
Oh, The Book of Love.
The Book of Love. So that was a book that explained everything, positions, the whole lot.
But there was no... Am I correct now, Joan? check me. There was no photographs. There were drawings. Would that be true?
They were drawings. The Book of Love. Only drawings.
Because I remember sneaking into Veritas to try and see it in the far, and I was disappointed because it was only drawings. But anyway. I hope Bishop...
We couldn't have been that explicit.
I hope Bishop McNamara didn't see the Book of Love.
No, we took that off the shelf when the chauffeur came running in to tell us.
You would run around grabbing stuff.
Yeah, we would. We'd take that one. Yeah. Now, the billings, all the ones like My Dear Daughter, you could leave that on.
Yeah.
Girls Talk, Girls Growing Up. They would have been kind of okay for the bishop to say, well, we're helping the kids. But
none
of those certain ones, absolutely not.
And what did you say? Surely he didn't disagree with Veritas selling books about the...
He did.
About the billings method.
No, the billings method he wouldn't have, because that was through the Catholic teachers.
Yeah.
That's the way
that was
they
the thermometer and all that stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but he did. Like, he was a very quiet man. Do you know what I mean? So he'd just come in, walk around, pick them up, leave them on the counter, and walk back out.
Yeah, he died in 1987.
Yeah. Now, I don't think he was Bishop of Dublin for long, was he?
No, he wasn't. But he was an academic.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, so the academics can be very, they can be very tetchy about other academics, especially in, I don't know if he was a moral theologian or whatever, but they can be very tetchy about other moral theologians.
Yes.
Actually, he was. He was soon appointed to teach moral theology, rising to become professor, wait for this, Joan, deep breath, a professor of dogmatic theology.
Dogmatic theology.
Dogmatic. Yeah.
This would be all literally, honestly, I worked there for so long. And then I worked in Mater Dei College, and for Veritas had a little bookshop there. And I used to deal there with Archbishop's House and met the bishop and all that sort of thing, and would deal with all the theologians then. You know, so I did a lot through all that. But I still didn't become overly religious.
And then Bishop McNamara, for Archbishop McNamara, unfortunately, died in office. He died suddenly.
He did.
So he was 4 years... Archbishop of Dublin after coming from the Archbishopric of Limerick.
Yeah.
But he was said at the time, that was in the 80s when, you know, contraception, talking about divorce, talking about liberalising women's right to choose. Now, a lot of them didn't get very far, but there was, it was beginning. And apparently he was appointed to Dublin to put a stop to that.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, he came into Veritas then to clear them books out. But as soon as he walked back out those doors, those books went back on themselves.
Well done. So you'll miss it when it's gone.
No, do you know, absolutely. It's, yeah. It's like it's always been an Abbey Street. It's been great employers,
yeah,
like
great.
My sisters. They yeah. also work there. And we, through school, like we went in and I would have got a few friends in as part-time workers. So they were very good. They're good employers. Like there was a few hiccups. Like they were a unionised shop.
Yeah,
so, you
rightly
know,
so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we had our ups and downs, but sure, they
but
were
it was
good.
A great,
and we were all on like commission.
I can't, oh, were you?
So imagine the time when the Pope came.
Yeah, okay, you were there, were you?
I was there, and we published all those, his dresses, everything, and we were on commission.
Oh, you published all his speeches and...
Yeah, yeah, the addresses, and there's your pictures now. You would have had all your pictures in them books.
Okay, what do you call them, the address? The
address of Pope John Paul II's address
okay.
of Ireland. So all his addresses in Galway,
okay.
they were all published. And they were selling all over.
Wow.
The country.
And what do you mean you got a commission? Like, you got penny
commission? We got a percentage, yeah. And this all rings a bell because that's Trudy. I worked with Trudy when she was in paper vessels. I would have been on the floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there'll be many people now that will remember, if not me, my two sisters, Helen and Mary as well. So they went on to be nurses. But at the time when the Pope came, we published everything. Veritas published everything.
Yeah.
And we sold them, like we were selling, like they weren't just buying one, they were buying two, three, four copies of the books. It's incredible.
And then, as you probably heard yesterday, when there was a new Pope, and I suspect when he was here, there was an uptick, as they say now, in demand for papal blessings from a new Pope.
Because when Pope John Paul I died, the people who were getting married and got married, he died when they were waiting on their papal blessings. And the absolute nightmare of them coming in saying, but which Pope will be on my papal blessing?
Okay.
And they would be going, well, which Pope do you want? Like, and it's, like, it was just chaos. They actually thought the Pope himself was blessing these.
I know. Now, apparently he does... Whoever holds the papacy, he does every few months, he would go into a room where there's thousands of these scrolls. And he stands up.
Joe,
and
really?
I do believe that, Joan, yes.
Okay, Joan. You need to convince me. No, I don't.
But it does say...
I don't.
But, Joan, it does say papal blessing.
I know.
You could do it in 2 minutes. He goes in, he stands up on a podium. There's a little ritual, you know, prayers or whatever. Yeah. And then he does...
Do you think that this place is... all over Rome, and they're producing these, and then he's taking them into the Vatican, and he's standing in a room, and he's blessing them before they're all shipped out. You honestly think that? I don't think I do. Prove me wrong.
I think I'm soft in the head. It's my understanding. See, that I was saying yesterday, there's always a backstory to everything that comes up in life. And I don't know where half the things come from, but I don't know where the papal blessing came when I mentioned the Veritas was shutting down. But that there was a row between the Vatican and all the street sellers and the shops, the religious shops in Rome. 10 years ago, they were all selling these papal scrolls for five times their value. So the Vatican took it back onto themselves and put a maximum price on them. But they're the ones who actually issued the scrolls. So why would you not believe?
I'm talking about 20 years ago. So you think the Pope did it even though there was these little shops all around the Vatican selling them.
Yeah, I'd say there's thousands. Thousands in a room.
You'd have to get to the bottom of that.
I know, you think I've gone soft in the head, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But I think there's one person that will find out, it'll be you.
Okay.
But I never heard
Joan,
that.
loads of people contacting us saying that you were a lovely woman in the shop. You were lovely. And was it your sister they're talking about?
They were, Mary and Helen.
Well, there you are now.
The Nolan family of Bohini.
The Nolan sisters.
In our family.
The Nolan
but
sisters.
There is five girls, yes.
Yeah, and the Nolans were from Bohini, weren't they, Baldoyle? The Nolan
sisters.
They were
from St. Anne's, actually, initially, you know, so I don't think there's a connection.
Okay.
Every now and then I pretend there is. Every now and then we might get up and sing, like you think.
Well done.
But anyway.
John, we'll try and get a few more. Another bit of good news. I don't know whether you heard Patricia Keane over the last few days. It's a woman with cerebral palsy, quadriplegic, and her hoist had broken. Well, that was today, is Thursday. That was Tuesday.
I heard that.
The spare part arrived yesterday. It was installed. great effort this morning, and she's now out of the bed. Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, it's great, yeah.
Just a week after
that
happened. Okay.
That's what you wish for. That's, Joan, nice talking to you.
Likewise, Joan. God bless you. Fine. Joan Nolan Farrell.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
People are asking me, this, I mentioned the Seafield Hotel in Ballymoney, and people point there's about 8 Ballymoneys in Ireland. It's Ballymoney near Gorey in County Wexford, between Arklow and Gorey, a bit narrow from Dublin. It's called the Seafield Hotel, and that's where Helen has gone for a night. Let's go to Annette Green first. You were a midwife in the Rotunda for 30 years.
Yeah, I'm actually 35 years in the Rotunda. Wow. And over 30 years of it, working in delivery suite. Yeah.
How many babies? And have any idea?
Well, we've averaged about 200 a year.
Okay.
But I'm involved in a lot of deliveries now because I'm one of the ward managers on the delivery suite.
Great.
So I've kind of got a nose in nearly every delivery that's going on. Yeah.
So, how many babies would a call?
Okay, so I've only delivered 3. And
wow.
The first one was about 10 years ago. And I was so excited about it. And the mother's looking at me going, and I said, this is so rare to see something like this.
Okay.
And had to explain to her about it. So the baby is born,
yeah.
And it looks like it has a pair of tights over its face.
Okay.
So it's all squashed. And what you have to do is just break it so it can take the first breath. And then you can release the head through it and the whole body will come out.
But it's extraordinarily rare.
Oh, very rare, yeah. I've seen 3. Like, that's 3. Yeah.
And are you aware of the look, apparently, especially for mariners, for seafarers?
Yeah. I knew that. I don't know where I knew that from. But I said it to the mother that time. This is so lucky. It's babies will never drown and fishermen will pay you to keep the call. So I put her in a little specimen puffer.
Okay.
Now it looks a little bit awful because it's slimy and wet.
Okay.
But put her into the dish and I just sealed and I gave to her, says, do what you want with it there, but the fishermen will pay you money for that.
I don't
take it to hope.
Okay. only 20 minutes out straight out. And the other two occasions, same. And there was there's no shape or make in terms of you can't predict it or it's not a cesarean or there's no particular...
You can't predict it. But most likely it will happen on a woman that comes in, maybe second or third baby.
Okay.
And no epidural. She's coming in delivering straight away and her membranes haven't broken. The bag of waters haven't broken. So that's how the baby gets caught in the bag.
Yeah.
So it just delivers...
But you knew to open the bag ASAP and let the child breathe.
Oh, yeah, because it has to take the first breath.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Just finger in and just tear it.
Okay.
And it tears quite easily, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well done, Annette. Yeah. Annette, you do a great job. Are you still a midwife? Well, you're in charge now, did you?
Yeah, I'm in charge, but I have a nose in every delivery that's going on, which is lovely,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but I often think you're the unsung heroines. You don't get enough credit.
Yeah, it's a very privileged job we're in, and any midwife will tell you that. No matter what area in the maternity hospital you're working in, I absolutely love it, I have to say, because you couldn't stick a job.
And Annette,
did you
deliberately go into nursing to become a midwife?
At the time I did. I went over to the UK, I went to London, and I did my nursing there, and came back here and did my midwifery in the Rotunda. I actually worked in Rotunda as a HCA when I was 10, and I used to wonder what went on behind the curtains.
Okay.
And so I just decided, I think I'll be a midwife. Much to my mother's delight that I decided I was going to do something. You know? Yeah.
And who delivered you?
I did look it up because we have a big delivery book that we record every delivery in. And all I knew was her name was Mary.
Okay, but you were delivered in. You were delivered in the Rotunda.
Oh, yeah. Delivered in the Rotunda. Yeah.
Magic,
long time ago.
magic. Okay, Annette, keep up the good work. You and all the medical staff generally, but I'm especially thinking of midwives and there's men, isn't there? There's male and female.
There is. We have quite a few men now,
Great. Okay. Thanks indeed,
right,
Annette. Go safely. Thanks. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, Maya Guilfoyle, three times. Thrice.
Yes.
Once, twice, three. You were pulled out of the water.
Yes. Yes, Joe.
And does that mean you nearly drowned three times?
Well, I could have drowned. Yeah, I could have drowned three times. But my mother told us we would never drown. That, like the last lady, the sailors were looking for to buy culls because they were going back to sea during the last war, World War. So we always felt we were very special. We wouldn't drown. Now, I did have three events when I actually had to be pulled out of the water. And I could have drowned.
Yeah, but how? On the three occasions, how were you? Did you save yourself, so to speak?
No, Joe. It was. I was once. I was around 16, and I was in Dunleary, and I was deciding to show off my swimming, which I couldn't swim.
Yeah,
and myself and my girlfriend, we doggy paddled out from the rocks. We went as far as we could from everybody so nobody could see us undressing, as you did in those days.
Yeah.
And I swept out and I was out of my depth and I panicked. Well, I nearly drowned her, never mind me. And a Scottish couple had to come in and pull us out.
And you, did. You were fearful.
Oh, I panicked completely.
Oh,
and I kept
thing.
Pushing her under. And there was nobody in sight because we had gone way, way, way out of. So nobody would see us undressing. And the second time was I was on holidays with girlfriends and I couldn't swim, of course, and they were playing ball in the swimming pool and they thought I wasn't being fun. So two of the lads came along and they swung me backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards and flung me into the pool. So you can imagine what happened.
Oh,
there.
That's dangerous.
I went down to the bottom and
deep
I came
end.
Up.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Everybody jumped in and I had to be hauled out. I was in, you know, in a state when
I
got out.
And then there was a third occasion again,
the
you
third
were saying.
Time I remember as well, I was only a child. My mother was standing on the beach with her sisters and they were chatting away and behind her back. And I remember my dress floating up over the water. I kept just walking straight out into the sea. And somebody turned around, saw me going straight out into the sea and came rushing out and pulled me out.
Now, the question I haven't asked you, were you born with a call?
Oh, sorry. Yes, of course I was.
Wow.
And my call was pulled off because I couldn't breathe. And it
Would
was
you reckon, off. You reckon three times saved?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my sister still had her call. My mother kept it for her.
Okay, wow.
She kept her call. And when I retired, I went for swimming lessons.
Oh, thank God. Everyone should. Everyone should. Maya Guilfoyle, good Amina Margot. Maya, Rachel Graham produced, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home with the latest colours and designs in curtains and bedding, in store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.